And we're podcasting from Chico, California, and home of the world's largest functional yo-yo. This is CinemaStash Rehash Movie Podcast with Jason, Wyatt, and Chris. We talk about 80s and 90s movies and provide insights about them you didn't know you needed or wanted. So sit back, relax, and join us. We're just about ready to get started.
Welcome back, listeners, and I hope you brought your still suits because we're going on a journey into the desert. We watched Dune this week, and let's just put it this way: some of us are confused. Some of us are
massively confused.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm Wyatt Campbell. We are the CinemaStash Rehash. I'm here with my friend Jason McClendon.
Hello.
And Chris Mattson.
I'm ready to spice it up.
let's expand our consciousness with
absolutely
some spice. By the way, fellas, I'm going to be running some serious inner dialogue here.
Okay, please do.
You're not going to hear it, but maybe the audience will. But
I hope they do.
I actually enjoyed the inner dialogue.
That's the part that I fucking hated. That totally took me out of the damn movie, like 100%, because every time I just laughed. Yeah, maybe she's the one I'm looking for. Okay. I don't know.
Okay,
I couldn't get into that part.
Because I think it might have helped like link some of the parts I didn't understand.
Well, that was obviously the point of it, but it was so stupid.
I hadn't seen it done. It hasn't been done in movies often.
No.
No.
It's almost like breaking the fourth wall, but...
Well, and it's funny, too, because I would say the first run of it, it's kind of like, oh, okay, you know... It's kind of like they're trying to fill you in on the story, you know,
right,
what you're saying. But then it becomes like, okay, so every character in the story has some inner dialogue that's...
Those sounds could be imitated.
I'd know the difference.
Yes. Perhaps you would have that.
That's a...
Which is big time unusual.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one character, I totally get. The main character would have the inner dialogue,
yeah,
but every fucking character has the inner dialogue.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. And after a while, it's like, oh, you get introduced to characters left and right. That's one of the biggest things. Obviously, it's an issue for a lot of people.
Well, yeah.
But you get introduced to characters left and right, and then those characters talk about other characters, like, instantly, with no background to them, and there's like, they're just names. And you're like, who the fuck are these people? What is this? And I have a really funny thing that I thought was really hilarious, and I had to print this out. But in 1984, when this movie was released, every theater handed this out to the theater goers because this movie was so fucking confusing.
Is it like a playbill
for a
freaking
play? It is literally terminology for everything that you hear in this movie.
Wow. Are you supposed
to read up on it
before you go in?
Well, obviously, because this movie was so confusing. And that's the reason, obviously, why it tanked.
Yeah.
It didn't do well. Critics kind of destroyed it.
That's
Lynch,
Lynch disowned it.
Hey, he wished he never did this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this.
What else did he do?
Well, he did like. Well, he's famous for Twin Peaks.
Eraserhead.
Like Eraserhead.
That's
another Kyle MacLachlan. MacLachlan is his man. MacLachlan pretty much stars in all of his movies.
What's another movie though?
Elephant Man. Blue Velvet is another one with MacLachlan. And
nothing good.
Well, stuff that's good, but not stuff that
I've never seen. Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is good. Twin Peaks is interesting, and for its time in 1990, it was very weird.
Right.
But if you watch,
I have no idea what it's about. So
it's just like a murder mystery show. But anyway, so David Lynch has this weird, you know, kind of style. So it's kind of, and you can't really say that this is David Lynch, but there are parts that are very David Lynchy, you know, and a lot of that it's kind of like the inner dialogue shit where it's like, why did you need internet? Like, why do we need to know that they're like, oh, I'm so suspicious.
Spice. What is it doing to me?
It really kind of took me away from the movie. I did not enjoy that part. Do we want to give like some sort of like recap on what the hell this story is kind of about?
Well, I mean, I feel like if anybody's watched this, they're probably, you know, like they're either aware of the whole story or kind of not, you know, which is probably mostly the case, but Dune is Frank Herbert wrote a series of novels, And Dune is the, you know, I think the first one. And then there's Dune Messiah. There's another one, too. I don't know it off the top of my head. But he wrote three novels, and they're epic. And they were very, very, very popular in the 70s. So everybody wanted to make the movie Dune. Like, everybody wanted to do it. And David Lynch, including, wanted to do it. But he realized when he got into it that this was going to be a... like a production company rough shot, you know.
Yeah,
like
very studio driven.
He was not going to have creative control to the end.
Yeah, he didn't get final cut or anything.
So he became very, you know, kind of like unmotivated. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, he knew halfway through that this was not going to be the movie that he wanted to make, and at that point he had already signed up to make two more after it.
Right.
So this movie was supposed to be like the foundation of a trilogy, and it never ended up being that because it tanked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that it tanked. But you got off topic. The topic was basically the movie is about a prophecy that gets fulfilled and a flying booger that can connect space time.
Okay, so yeah. Those are the guild navigators with the guild.
That explains it all, but that's pretty much what
he was like a big giant brain bug from Starship Troopers. That's like the first thing that I thought of him. Like he just was the weirdest character, but he was the most intriguing. Like one of the something was very intriguing. I'm like, because you have no idea who they are.
You are transparent. I see many things.
Yeah.
They show up, and I loved how the Emperor walks into the middle of the area and felt the need to flip his cape off.
Yeah.
To announce apparently that he's somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they were very intriguing, and like that was like, okay, I'm a little into this. But then it was just so much inner dialogue and so much just name throwing that made no sense, which is why they gave you this pamphlet.
David Lynch didn't set it up, you know, instead of it being like they had this like long, you know, rather than a screen crawl, they had Virginia Madsen, you know, tell the screen a little bit of the story.
Right.
Even though she like after that moment, it's just like her time in the movie's done for the next hour, 45 minutes. But
literally took one day to film.
But yeah, so she kind of fills you in on like how there's this, you know, this the guild and like the guild navigators. They have basically used so much spice and their consciousness has allowed them to where they can fold space, which, you know, has accentuated space travel and domination over the galaxy. But yeah, so. It's kind of weird, like how the guild navigator seems to be able to read minds and kind of seems all powerful. But at the end, he's all like, "You didn't see me. I wasn't here."
I did not say this. I am not here.
It's like, why?
Why was he there? Yeah.
The humanoids are with him. Oh, I don't know. I didn't understand that.
Those are the guild, and then he's the guild navigator.
The yeah.
The Harkonnens?
Harkonnens, yeah.
Harkonnens were in some kind of radiation.
Yeah, like.
So they were having.
They didn't even get into that. Yeah, it's like they were.
Well, they're two feuding houses, Harkans and.
I'm asking you because.
Yeah, and Atreides.
Okay, so the, you know, like they showed at the beginning, there's like the planets. You know, like there's the House Atreides, which is on this one planet, then there's the House Harkonnen that's on another, then there's the third planet that's like got the Emperor, and then there's the fourth planet,
which is Dune. Yeah.
And they all like coexist together, but like the Emperor rules over the other two families,
right?
But he's also trying to manipulate what's going on Dune because the House Atreides and the House Harkonnen are fighting over it, you know?
Exactly.
And he knows that, you know, he knows that that's happening, but he's not, you know, like really, he doesn't care. Until the guild comes in, they're like afraid of Paul Atreides because they can see the future, and they're like, they know that their demise is going to come, so they're like, we need you to kill Paul.
Right.
This kind of felt like 15 movies in one.
Yeah, it was.
It was very like, yeah.
Three witches that were talking really cool and
yeah,
making people do crazy things, and there was
that shit I didn't get either. I mean, I didn't understand what the voice was.
No, you come here.
She's using the voice.
And
it was the weirding.
Didn't
way.
Explain that at all.
Yeah, it's like so the witches, the
obviously
the,
can control people.
The Bemi Jesuits. Yeah, they have the weirding way, and gosh, in the in, yeah,
weird and.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's kind of a cool concept to think that like it's sound that could, you know, affect matter, you know, like
exactly. No, that was a cool part,
but it wasn't really, you know, like they kind of rushed it, like how it's like when Paul is first introduced and he's having all this inner dialogue looking at like all the planets, you know, and like talking about like,
yeah,
dude, you know, like,
yeah,
there's no water, yeah, no rain or whatever.
It's just, it doesn't make sense.
And then in walks Gurney,
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
And my favorite character in the whole thing.
I swear to God, the guy hasn't aged, and like I think he popped out bald and never got hair.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
looked exactly the same.
Yeah, and then Dr. Yui, who you believe Jason was
from Quantum Leap, and
Quantum Leap.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff. Yeah, but I best know him from Quantum Leap.
Well, my iPad.
He was in my favorite sports movie called Necessary Roughness.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
Yes.
Wait. Yeah. Was he?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I know that Scott Bakula was in
Necessary Roughness. Yeah, Scott Bakula. Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense that they would pal up together again.
We'll do that later.
Maybe actually it was part of Quantum Leap, and like he just like they just came, you know,
yeah,
started playing baseball. So oh boy.
I'm gonna turn you back. Wait. I don't understand. I mean, there's a lot of parts I don't get. I mean, like you said, they did do a good job wrapping it together. But there was some parts that I did enjoy, and I know for an 80s movie it was kind of cheesy, but I liked the part where they fought with the armor on.
That
I like the fight. I like how it ended.
And that technology was supposed to be like cutting edge. They're like, nobody's seen this on screen. You know, like a bodysuit, you know, made of cubes.
So it was like 8-bit bodysuit.
Oh man!
If you'd have fought one whit below your abilities, I'd have given you a good scar to remind you.
BT Dubs, you were totally right about the Quantum
Leap guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. Exactly. That's actually part. I mean, I actually laughed a lot at that because I mean, I thought it was so cheese, and I actually liked the following scene
when the guy gets shot in the head. And
cool body armor, because that was a cool effect.
The body armor I thought was pretty cheese. I mean, I don't know, for some reason, it's like they made it such a cool thing, and they never brought it into like practical use later. Like, you know, like why show that and then never use it again?
Yeah.
But either way, but I mean, I know it was part of him, like, you know, showing who he is, what he can do, and all that. But I actually enjoyed the following scene when he's like doing that like suicide bot or whatever, and he's hopping over shit and he's like shooting it. And I mean, that was like more. I enjoyed that concept and using that kind of effect. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed that better than the cube fight.
For shooting the tips off of all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I like that better than the cube fight. But I don't know. But the movie was totally confusing to me, and I didn't enjoy it until about halfway through when they finally got to
the sand planet.
Yes, Dune. I'll just call it. I was trying to call it what it was really called, but
Arrakis.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just too much name throwing and all that. But when you shoot 4 hours worth of film and then you don't have final cut and you give it to the editors and the studio wants to cut it down to 2 hours.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to get some sort of a decent story out of that? And you know.
And I feel like the bit where they just didn't, like the worst part of the lack of explanation is like how they don't really get into why people are like bending over backwards for spice.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness.
You know, they right. like explain how spice led to space travel, but that doesn't explain why spice changes like the normal, like common man, you know, because it's like when he eats the spice, he's all like, you know, whoa, I can feel it. And then later on, he starts telling her, he's like, you gave me the spice, but because of my enhanced abilities, it like made me do this. So it's like people eat spice regardless of like status, you know, it's a matter if you can get your hands on it. It's like,
right.
But what does it do to the common man? They don't really like get into that until the Fremen.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently it is a drug. It's kind of a mind altering state. Yeah, so, I mean, it's probably obviously has some street value if you want to call it that. But I mean,
Oh man, I want to party with him.
You
man.
Know it.
Yeah.
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 Not only is it something that is great for space travel, and then it's also a drug you can, you know, probably sell, or so it's a commodity for sure, no matter what.
Is it a drug, or is it something they sprinkle?
Kind of is a drug, I guess.
I thought it was cinnamon.
Well, I mean,
that's what it looked like.
But the idea of it extending life is already so intriguing in wanting that.
I heard a couple of times in the movie was this life water, and I never understood. Maybe I missed it. When I was watching it.
So it's basically like you know, like who knows what it is, but it's what the Bene Gesserit witches take to become like The mother's
takes to become Black Panther.
Yes. Yeah. Life that's water. A good analogy.
Life water is a powerful poison used by whoever to induce their abilities. So it induces their abilities. So when he awoke from that, he transformed, obtaining all the powerful psychic abilities. And he actually gained the ability to control the sandworms from this life water. So,
which they don't really, they make it seem like he conquered the sandworm and they like live in harmony. But when, you know, because there is a mini series of Dune that's way more, it explains way more, you know, and that, that's part of it is it's like the sandworms are the byproduct of the sandworms is spice. So it's like if you control the sandworms, you control spice.
Is there a relationship between the worms and the spice?
As I said, they defend the spice sand. As to their relationship with the spice, who knows?
Well, it makes sense.
And that's kind of what
that's what the connection between the sandworms and the spice was.
Yeah.
Because I heard a whisper that a couple times too.
I don't know if it's like the worm castings, but it's like, you know, kind of like it's a byproduct of their life is like the spice. So it's like as long as the sandworms exist, the spice exists.
Yeah.
So when the rain came out, was there no more sandworms?
No, the sandworms still live. It's just, you know, it explains why the spice is in such hostile, weird areas. It's like they can't just find spice or recreate it. It's like you gotta dig around.
I'm asking you all these questions, guys. I imagine it takes a couple times to get the movie. And you've watched
for sure.
Jason and I have.
So. Yeah.
You're going to be the go-to on info here.
That's okay, and I'm probably like, people are probably like sitting there going like, wrong, no, it's not the fucking, it's not worm cast.
God, you're such a, yeah.
We're a movie podcast, not a podcast.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Should have, however, yes, read the book, but I, you know, but the thing is, it's like even, that's what I think that if you do a good movie adaptation of a book, I should not necessarily have to read the book in order to get the idea of the film.
Case in point, you know, Lord of the Rings.
Like, right.
I was just going to say name one, but that's right. A good
point. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what this movie was kind of like going off of like a momentum of this novel series being liked by a lot of people, enough people to where if they did it right, more people would have gotten it that had like read the books than like not. So I kind of look at it that way where they were like expecting people to be on board like with how they're doing this and just being like, we don't need to explain this, but like everybody read it, you know? So
yeah, well, that's just what they're anticipating.
Minimal explanation anyways.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was weird to me because it just, there seemed to be a lot of moments in the movie that didn't need to be in there. And with all the moments, you know, with all the little time they had, it seemed like they could live, for example, the mom and son are running through the desert for like an hour by the tremor. I mean the thumper, none of that stuff had to happen. Leave that whole, we know how badass the worms are, you don't need to show that part
and let it be like just slow motion version and wasting like 45 seconds
and
of film
and that same shot of the worm like diving into the sand.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That's a minute and a half explanation.
Yeah,
I didn't get.
I know this was actually one movie that I'm not used to saying this out loud, but like I would rather have less bullshit like of a shot of you walking downstairs or whatever. Rather just give me the fucking, what is the idea of who are these people? Why are we talking about like the Reverend Mothers I mean that whole guild of what I guess I call it a guild just completely made no sense. I mean, they had this power, obviously they could read minds, they can influence shit. They, you know, but, and that leads into the hand in the box part.
Put your hand in the box.
It's my dick in a box.
Sorry.
Could he be the one? Maybe. But will he be ours to control?
Mm-hmm. You know, and she blows my mind there because, you know, she obviously knows who he is. He's testing to see if he's going to be this messiah or this person that's supposed to come back and save the Fremen.
But they never talk about it. It's only like
they don't.
In their inner dialogues.
Yeah, and that's the part... One. Yeah.
I'm telling you, prophecy in a book.
Yeah. But that's the shit that took me out. I mean, I don't know. I would rather had it been a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
And if you cut it together, you could put all those action sequences and all that other stuff in there.
I agree. It felt like there was some waste of time.
Yeah.
I just didn't.
They try to make it artsy, but not. And still, well, you still got lost.
Another example, the entire Baron part. Like, take out Baron completely. I don't, like, he doesn't need to be in there. You just have to, I know that it's about Dune, but
But he was a cool floating fat man.
No, well, that whole whole introduction to the Harkonnen
face was so gross. Like, it just was so stupid.
Or before that, even, like, when he's getting his boils drained and and then he like pulls the heart plugs out of the guy.
Hey, what was that about? What is he? Is he a vampire? Is he a vampire? I don't understand.
And why do the assistants have their ears sewn together?
They weren't like those are. You know, like,
I'm not killing this movie.
They don't have time to explain. I don't even know if that stuff that like was actually part of the book or if that's David Lynch. Because it's like the whole they're wearing like hazmat suits that are like painted black, you know, like, and they can only breathe that gas or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Is it a fish tank or whatever?
I don't know. I mean, I just know that when Patrick Stewart stabs it, you know, like it just. Let me fight him.
And everybody's like Irish apparently on that that planet. The Harkonnens are all red haired and Sting was a fucking freak show.
I read somewhere that they're like all Nordic actors.
Well, yeah, really? I mean, they're definitely European, except for Kyle MacLachlan, and he's just like, you know, speaking with no accent while all these other people have these thick, you know, like Cleto.
Paul, come with me.
I thought there was some fun aspects. Like, I mean, even though the Baron was like, I agree with Chris, kind of pointless. But I mean, they needed obviously a head
was Sting's
character.
Steam bath.
I didn't mean the Baron. That's actually. But what I mean, they needed somebody for.
He was like there was three bad guys, because I guess the Booger was a bad guy too.
The Booger was just like,
I don't know.
He was.
And like, you're talking about the Navigator when you say Booger.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the
he had like a weird.
He's like a puppet master. You know.
He did kind of look like the big thing from Super.
I couldn't stand like the hallucinations when Paul's under the water of life and it just kept showing that worm's like mouth going.
And apparently there was babies involved and
spewing
and he was
smoke out of the Guild Navigator's mouth and it was just like
So there's a lot of confusing plot points, obviously. I mean, but as far as a movie, I thought some of the special effects were pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I love the worms. The worms
sets,
I liked.
The sets,
two costumes.
And the costumes I thought were better than the special effects.
The worms were good. I love the sets. The costumes were great. The makeup was good with the
Baron
and whatnot.
There was apparently like 80 sets.
Cool. Yes.
80 sets on 16 stages.
And what was it? It was over 20,000 extras, and I believe like a 1,200 or 1,400 like just special effects crew, sound, whatever.
Not surprised.
Just huge. It was a $40 million budget, and obviously it didn't do well. I mean, I think it made $6 million in its opening weekend, and then it turned out to gross about 30-something million. So it was about $10 million shy. So it was considered a box office flop, obviously, but. It was a massive production. I mean, I don't even think Lord of the Rings had a 20,000 person. Yeah.
They probably also didn't
extra
have
cast, you know?
200 laborers clear out, you know, like the desert area by hand over 2 months.
Right. Yeah.
Just to go back to your point, I did read the Fremen.
Right.
The Fremen were mostly played by Czech actors.
So okay.
Yeah, they definitely they look like. I mean, it's a bunch of white guys.
What did Sandow's character do?
Sandow's
character.
Who's Sandow?
He was.
That was in the ship when they first saw the worm, and instead of.
Oh, you mean like, Max von Sydow?
And he was with Patrick Stewart, and the Duke showed up.
Yeah.
And that's when he was trying to become allies or whatever.
He was essentially like kind of like a lead.
I think he
represented. You know, he was studying the Fremen and went out and lived with them. You know, like
Bigger part, but he just I don't know if I ever saw him again after that one part.
Well, he just after he gets his still suit ripped up and gets like the really bad acting by the Harkonnen, he's like, you go. To your desert. Die.
The Baron's son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take him to his desert. To die.
No, I did not like his character.
Right before he goes and rips that cow's tongue off and starts eating it.
And that was a real. Yeah. That was a real dead-ass cow.
I mean, I don't think he was eating the real cow, but that was a real.
Did you say what the heart plugs were about?
Well, it seemed like the Baron, whoever he abducts, you know, like whatever people they like abduct or, you know, inherit, they put a heart plug on as kind of like a, you know, slave device. You disobey, you get your heart plug pulled.
And then the Baron's just gonna rub his face in your blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he floats out into the Sarlacc pit.
And then he's just gonna like sit there and like do circles and float around while that guy is controlling the steam bath.
Oh.
Like, I was like, what is the guy controlling? And then like steam comes out. Like, I was like, oh man, what the fuck is this?
Comes out a new man. He's all shiny and glistening and just ready.
Like, you know. With his like wing underwear on. You know. Like,
okay, so I just want to point out Wyatt's been ripping this movie apart more than we have.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I wasn't gonna defend it.
You don't have to defend it. It was decent. I watched it and I was entertained. I mean, there was parts where I was like, that's silly and stuff, but yeah. I mean, it wasn't as silly as some of the movies we've watched, so I don't think it was bad. There was parts that I didn't think needed to be there, and then it was so confusing that I didn't.
Yeah. That's my biggest complaint. I mean, I was actually involved with the film the whole time, and I'm sitting here just trying to figure out the names, and that's the problem. It's like reading a fantasy book. Have you ever opened up a fantasy book, and it's just like names you can't pronounce.
Yeah.
You don't understand what they're talking about, and it takes you like 3/4 of the book to, oh, okay, finally everything met. But anyway, what I wanted to bring up was what Ridley Scott was originally supposed to direct this film, but he had problems with family, I guess, at the time. Anyway, so he pulled away to do Blade Runner. But then also H.R. Giger was, obviously he was going to pull him to work with him. And what can you imagine this film would have looked like from Ridley Scott's perspective, and then have an H.R. Giger influence?
I feel like the guild would have looked the same.
You think so?
Especially with H.R. Giger involved.
I don't know. They would have had a lot more texture and detail, probably. But other than that, they probably would.
But I feel
for,
like...
For the fans, but also more for me. What does H.R. Giger do?
He did all the concept art for Alien.
Yeah.
You know, like the Xeno...
So him and Ridley Scott are pretty...
Yeah, he's a conceptual artist. Yeah, he just... Yeah. Okay. Amazing.
Xenomorph is his thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, he also did a lot.
A lot more into that than.
Yeah, he did. He did Species too, like all that kind of intricate design. So that's his two main and thing.
The fans, just so
there's a documentary. Right here, do that. There's a documentary on Netflix with him, and I had no idea how weird he was.
Oh yeah,
I mean it makes sense, but you just don't know until you see it, and he's just like this really weird guy. But yeah, so funny enough, David Lynch turned down a favorite movie of all three of ours to direct this. And it would have been crazy if he would have directed this movie in said movie.
What is it?
Return of the Jedi.
No way.
Yes. Yeah, I read that too.
He turned down Return of the Jedi because he really wanted to do this. Do Dune. Or no, it was more
I
like
Dune was going to be his. So I don't blame him, you know.
And he told George Lucas, he's like, that's your thing. This is mine.
That makes sense. I mean, Dune, if you were to make a trilogy of Dune and it was a huge book.
Yeah.
It makes sense they'd be like, "Well, fuck that, man. I'm doing Dune."
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ridley Scott had, you know, bailed out of Dune, so it was a lot of people wanted to do it, like I was saying.
When did this come? I thought this came out like 89.
No, it was like 84.
84.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, beyond the confusing parts, I mean, like Reverend Mother and stuff like that. And then they get, like I said, I didn't start enjoying the movie until they got to Arrakis.
Yeah.
You know, and they're finally there. And of course, the fucking Emperor has a solid gold goddamn spaceship.
A pyramid spaceship.
Yeah, oh, God.
With guns on
top. Yeah, I mean, if...
Like, when they go up to the top and on their little, like, bikes with guns. I was like, what the fuck are these guys?
I felt very, like when you see before they go away, with Paul on his homeworld. I mean, even the military outfits they were wearing felt very like kind of German-esque, idea of, I don't know why, but it felt that. And so the original ending, he casts out the Emperor and he regains, and then he marries the daughter.
The daughter.
And it's so weird because he's so in love with this other chick.
Oh no. In the miniseries, it's like, it goes into that, how he has this full on life where it's like, he marries the Emperor for political and royal reasons, but he's got his concubine.
Oh, there we go.
Johnny.
There we go.
Is that Finkel Einhorn?
No.
Einhorn is Finkel, right?
Yeah. That is her. That is her.
Yeah,
huh?
Is her. Yeah, it is.
Holy shit.
But yeah, that was supposed to be
your gun is digging into my hip.
Oh my god.
See, yeah, you got it now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I was a little late. Yeah, and wasn't also Starfighter, right?
No.
Was she Maggie?
No, she's not Maggie.
That was the other movie we're gonna do next.
Oh shit. I like inner monologue.
Is that you guys' inner dialogue?
Yeah. But what I was saying, oh my god! But what I was saying,
I don't care what you guys say.
I know.
It's okay with me. I didn't like it at first, but it grew on me because you don't see it often, and it helped. So
yeah. Okay, that's good. So, but then he comes back, and so that's what I was saying before is like the endings were different, and that's what kind of threw me. It was like it made sense that he would go with the fact that he's the Messiah,
yeah,
and rather than like you know take on that other role of marrying her,
yeah,
and whatever because he's so in love, and I will love you forever, and I only met you 3 days ago,
yeah,
which was another like little aspect of the flaw that I mean it kind of tore me out. It's like you're instantly in love, you show up here, you're only here for like 3 days. Actually, no, what I heard was like more like 2 years. Fremen? Yeah.
No, it's way longer.
Yeah, I found out it was more like 2 years. Oh, so yeah. I take that back. But that there was no consciousness of time. I mean, you didn't understand that. So they you had to know that.
That whole span of time from when he's like teaching the Fremen the weirding way.
It was like 2 years. And then they like
start fighting against the Harkonnen. Yeah, that's not like 2 weeks.
It's yeah.
It's like
a 2 year aspect.
Yeah, because like the Harkonnen are like using the spice
right.
harvesters. Yeah, and it's like he has... I mean, in the real story, like Usul, Paul, Muad'Dib,
yeah, that's right.
Has I mean, like he and Chani have kids,
mm.
So it's like when he marries the emperor's daughter. So,
yeah,
like he's already got this. It's like Frank Herbert, the writer of this, said like the biggest problem he had with David Lynch's vision of this is that like rather than it being like his story where Paul was playing God,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it's like he made Paul into God, where it was like he was making it rain. You know, so it's like Frank Herbert was more like, no, Paul just like has powers and he started
like a literal God, but he was.
Yeah.
In this one, he literally was God.
Yeah. In this one, he was like doing supernatural things, you know, and in like the story, it's more like the spice makes him kind of a, you know, like an advanced human in terms of consciousness and like how he manipulates people and power yeah. and strength. But like he can't make it rain, you know.
So. Just with the water aspect, what was up with the big giant tanks of like just this water that was, and where the hell did it come? That's another thing. I was like, what's up with this water? And that's before he goes and drinks the life water.
Yeah.
But there's these big, and it's like, and that's almost treated as it's almost a treasure as well. Cause he was like, it's a treasure. Or I mean, you know, cause yeah. it was just like, no,
he's
yeah,
like
right.
He's like millions of decaliters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Millions of decaliters.
I know it was such. Another thing. You know,
I feel like it's. Like it's. I don't remember the explanation in the miniseries because it would. They probably do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there is.
But it just seems like it's one of those things where like the Fremen, since they know the planet better than like the outsiders, they know where the aquifers are. They know like
right.
And it probably has to do with the sandworms. You know, and
yeah, and he mentions that there's only 9 aquifers and only the elite know where all 9 are. I mean, it's yeah. like it was like a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would make sense for they'd have to have these, but where the fuck did the water come from? And
ice
yeah, exactly.
Came from
ice right.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Because
it never rained there, so where the hell is this? Yeah, so that was another point.
That's kind of like
something should have been
total
explained.
Recall thing where it's like, is it a desert planet or is it just a planet going through a massive like you know dry spell where it's actually got ice cores you know
true.
At the poles that you just
yeah totally
and has water below the surface just on the surface it doesn't
yeah
because it's something Kelvin.
Something Kelvin.
I can't remember the exact number, but I was like, they're using these terms of measurement that are kind of like fancy, you know, decaliters.
Sometimes I wish they had, you know, more broader terms in their dialogue. You know, I wish they would have told us little things.
Well, yeah, like you know, I mean, I'm thinking about
like how long the time was. It could have been like, it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I don't know why they said that.
Yeah, he could have been like, he could have just been looking off in the sunset, and it could have been like, caught everybody up to speed. Like, so it's been 2 years.
I know.
I've had 2 kids with my concubine,
dude.
No, not in the concubine, because in the movie.
No, in the story, like Chani is his concubine, and he refers to her as such. No, he doesn't. But Duke Leto refers to Lady Jessica.
That's because she's a Fremen.
No, it's
like a wild
Lady thing. Jessica is just a. She's
well, supposed to be his mother.
She's a Bene Gesserit. Oh, yeah, but like he's, you know, he's like when he's dying, he's like Lady Jessica, my concubine. Like he doesn't even call her because they never got married.
Yeah,
you know? You're talking about
it's such an official
Duke Leto. Yeah,
you're talking about the Duke. I'm sorry.
It's like us going. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
We who carry the name of concubine, history will call us wives.
Not my mistress.
No, yeah, it's basically the same.
We haven't even talked about the daughter yet either. We haven't even talked about like the blue hair.
Oh yeah, Ali.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because I mean, in the other story, like her, she's crazy, dude.
Really?
I mean, obviously you can tell that. Like, she's a little bit crazy, powerful.
Yo, true.
But yeah, like compared to Paul, like she's nuts. You know. Like more like nuts with the power.
And like, am I lost? I mean, I don't recall seeing her through the movie until the very end.
Well, you know, like her first appearance is like when Paul drinks the water of life and Lady Jessica's nose is bleeding.
Oh.
And then she comes over and she's like, it's Paul! You know, like.
There's that weird scene where Lady Jessica drinks the water of life and she's like, I can't drink the water of life because I have a baby.
Yeah.
And then it comes out a couple weeks early.
Yeah.
Like this weird.
They have this psychedelic womb scene.
Yeah, weird womb scene. Remember? How come the baby was born with blue eyes? She was born a Fremen.
That's.
Good. But that means it's because you've been around the spice long enough. That's the only reason why your eyes turn blue. So I mean,
it's pretty quick to be born with blue.
Because Max von Sydow's character said the same thing. It's like, I've been around the, or I don't know.
Okay, so that's something like that. That's the best illustration of time right there. Is that like. When Lady Jessica prematurely gives birth to that kid, because that kid was at least four or five. Yeah,
right. Okay.
So that's it. Like we can say that had to be at least 5 years.
Okay. Good point. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what the? Yeah.
The kid should have been like, I'm 5 years old.
Yeah. Yes.
They had lots of sex and had a baby, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah. I don't know. Firestarter Girl is cool. I just didn't really.
No, she was a little bit of a baffling character, because she appeared kind of out of nowhere.
She turned the anti-gravity on the Baron, that kind of created a funny scene. So.
And then she
slid his face, too. That was sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She totally cut Joker in his face. I was like, whoa, this girl's crazy.
Come to me, Baron.
Yeah. And then they like gave her that scene where it's like, you know, like there's all this warfare going on behind her and she's holding a dagger and like got her little finger poking up the sky and it's like, you know, playing like the Dune rock music where it's like,
okay, I'm glad you brought that up. So are we just gonna pass by that the music was performed by Toto?
I didn't even catch that. Toto? No shit.
Oh, that makes shit.
Sense. Yeah, it says the music was performed besides like the Dune intro or whatever.
So instead of like
all those crazy guitar riffs, was like Toto the band. Like, pretty sure.
So instead of like the rain in Africa, yeah, it's exactly. The rain in Arrakis. I like the rain in Arrakis.
I don't know.
I'm right on.
I thought you
were excellent
for sure. But Toto did the music. So
well, that makes sense. I mean, there was so much.
Not Hans Zimmer or whatever. Toto action.
Yeah, you would have thought Sting would have done the music or something, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like, why not? Yeah. I'm already here. I might as well compose it.
I did like the fight scene between Muad'Dib and...
Yeah, that was good.
That was a decent fight scene.
And that would have been a perfect spot to bring the shields back on, you know? It's like,
he didn't need it, though.
Well, yeah, because they were showing him that he was... Because
his inner dialogue was Bruce Lee. His inner dialogue was like, Ben like a reed.
That's right.
And then he ki-eyed...
Like
his chest is split right open. I was like, holy shit, he's dead, dude. Muad'Dib went crazy.
I like how the Fremen were like,
stuffed that knife right up his jaw into his head.
So were all those people when he was out front and then there's a bunch of people like behind the gate?
Yeah.
Were all those real people? Because they didn't have...
What do you mean real people?
All the extras. Were they all like actual real extras?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, they had so many extras.
Yeah, 20,000 extras.
Yes, you were talking about it earlier, and I was thinking...
Well, you got to think about when all the people start, like, he keeps doing this, you know, like, I'm the leader now, which that was another reason why I was like, it had to have been a lot of time, because all of a sudden he becomes the leader of Arrakis, you know, and like, you know, oh, he's fulfilling the prophecy, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, outside of noticing that his sister has grown 5 years, like, you would... Like, I didn't even think about that until we started talking about it. I'm like, well, it's probably, I mean, it had to be a couple years, but no, it's like, he has a sister who literally is walking and talking and stabbing people. So, I'm guessing five, at least.
I wonder why it took so long for the Harkonnens to get there, Harkonnens.
the heart, why it took them so long to
attack. 5 years seems like a long time for.
Well, because he had to teach all the Fremen the Weirding way, you know, and.
So you're saying the Harkonnens waited for him to teach the Weirding way?
Well, the Harkonnens didn't know he was with the Fremen, and they didn't know where the Fremen were because they weren't concerned with him.
They learned at the end that he was Maladie. They didn't even know he was Maladie.
Yeah.
See that, and that was another funny thing because like then the Navigator comes back.
Yeah.
And it's going like, what's up with all the, you know, the bullshit that's happening on Arrakis? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, it was like 2 days ago, you know, it felt like, you know, in the movie, it was 2 days ago. Why?
Yeah.
And it was like, so that's cool about talking about the time perspective because fuck, I mean, all these scenes were starting to go, this is like, wait, I don't get it. You know,
you know what it helped is if like,
Kyle, we got a pamphlet.
If Kyle MacLachlan, you know, like this shit, his hair grew out and he grew a beard or something.
Yeah. But yeah, instead, he looked exactly the same.
Like he's the only Fremen, I guess, that can keep a clean face because it's like he was out there for 5 years and he still looks like he was only, you know, out there for a few days, whereas like Stilgard is just looks like he's like a chimney sweep from Mary Poppins, so dirty.
Well, we haven't talked about the not the doctor guy, not the guy from Quantum Leap, the other guy that was in like Wyatt Earp. Or
are you talking about the his kind of like his teacher, his the guy that's teaching him how to do the Weirding way, the guy with the bushy eyebrows?
Did he teach him how to do the Weirding way?
Yeah, he was the one that was teaching him how to use.
I swear to God, that guy can fly.
What?
I've never seen eyebrows like that. I swear he can use those and fly. He can fly.
Not the old guy. Are you talking about the old guy or the young one?
The old guy was.
Oh my God!
The old guy was the guy that was.
The old guy had a huge eyebrow.
See, this is why this movie's so confusing. There's too many fucking people.
The old guy that the Baron was like, if you want to live, you have to milk your cat.
Yeah, it was. I thought I heard that wrong. He did say milk, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He's like, you're gonna have to milk this beast. It was just that scene. Talk about an unnecessary scene. You know, like what is the point of that?
I did like the suits, the Fremen suits.
The still suit.
Yeah, where you poop and pee in your thigh pad.
Dude,
yeah. Drink your own sweat.
Both Patrick Stewart.
The urine goes to the thigh.
Both Patrick Stewart and Max von Sydow said that was the most uncomfortable fucking suit they've ever worn.
Well, that's because Patrick Stewart has like a 12-inch penis.
Well, yeah, and that's how, well, it's what he said. He's like, you know, I liked the way it looked on my body.
I have a girlfriend, but I like the way he looked on his body as well.
I like how he's got the skullet towards the end, you know, because he's been out in the desert for a few years, so the mud flap is really there, you know.
I like how you go Scottish.
Well, you got it with
he was Hulkamanian pretty hard.
No, kind of, yeah. Yeah, it was great.
There's Hulkamania right there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Guys, like I said, it was. I watched it. I'd watch it again to kind of figure out more.
I want to watch it again because that was a thing. Because, like, you know.
I guess we can give it the CSR rating.
Sure.
I don't really know what these ratings mean anymore because.
Well, I think it's a perception of what we view the movie as.
Well, we're just going to have to just go out and rank our best movies and see what the fans think.
So I'll start off because I picked this movie.
Okay.
And I would give this movie, let's like a 6.9, and that a lot of that has to do with the fact that I think that the, you know, rewatching it again and just seeing how like awesome the sets are, how cool the costumes are, and how like everybody seems all in, like there's nobody that's dogging it, even Sting's not dogging it,
right?
And there's a lot of like there was obviously a lot of poor decisions, you know, made,
right? Well, behind, it's unfortunate
behind the camera and behind the scenes. But it's still watchable to me. Like, I've seen it so many times I can't count. But I watched it again and I liked it. So
you pretty much gave it a 7.
Yeah, but I would
give it a 7 out of 10.
I wouldn't give, like, I feel like a 7 is after
it does
after,
jump it up
after
a bit.
After hearing like how confused you guys are, and then I like or Jason was
I didn't end as confused as I started, but I didn't like the way they fixed the confusion.
Well, yeah, and.
And then, well, that's my biggest problem is because as the movie went on, you start to kind of pick it up, but they smack you in the face right in the beginning with all this shit, and it's a bit overwhelming. I mean, it makes sense why they give you this fucking pamphlet when you walk through the theater door, and it's like, you're going to need this.
No doubt.
You know?
No doubt.
But so in the very beginning, you're smacked a little bit. So you're like, whoa, who are all these people that they're talking about?
Well,
so
I said 7, Jason. What do you think?
For me, see... I this is probably gonna be my lowest rating for sure, and it's gonna be like a 5. And it's only because I see potential and I want to watch it again, because now that I've read more about it, and that's the thing, is if you didn't watch, if you didn't read the book, then you're going to be lost.
Yeah.
That's so true. I mean, don't even watch the movie unless you've read the book or read about it.
If you've read the book, you probably think the movie's so way off.
And you could, yeah. And like, that's the thing. So, I mean, and that's, I hear it was pretty mixed. I mean, there's some people who read the book and still love the movie, but there's some people who have read the book and hated the movie. So it's mixed. If you love the book, maybe you'll enjoy it. But for me, I give it like a 5. I see potential in it. I want to watch it again. So yeah, that's me. Probably about a 5.
I'll split it right in the middle. I'll give it a 6. I think everything you said, you guys said it fine. The only thing I would add is that, they didn't do a good enough job bridging the confusion to me. I mean, I got it.
Yeah.
It got it fine. It is what it is. But, but the reason why I give it a point higher than you is because it was entertaining enough. You know, there was entertaining parts. I love some of the cast I really did enjoy.
Yeah.
Though Sting didn't have a big part, it was cool to see Sting.
Yeah.
I love John Picard.
Yeah. Always.
So I'll give it a 6. I'll say it's a good.
Okay.
6.
Fair enough.
I'd watch it again. I would recommend it to a friend that is bored, that wants to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're done, Chris, it's going to be your decision. What is going to be your next selection?
I'm kind of a comedy, more of a comedy guy. So I'm going to switch it up, and I think I'm going to try comedy. I think I'm going to go Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh my God! Can't wait.
All right, well that's excellent. So stay tuned. And oh, by the way, be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and rate and review the show, please. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever.
Yeah, check out the Instagram. Jason's been posting a lot of stuff that's not necessarily just updates on the show. He's really putting some thoughtful posts out there on movies that we haven't even done.
Yeah, if you love movies, it's a pretty cool little podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, Instagram and podcast.
Perfect. All right, well, with that said, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Cinema-Rehash. Bye.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of those long, all-night bike patrols? Are you constantly on alert and stressed out for that possible Cylon threat and need just a little release?
Yeah.
Well, it's just Manaphy.
Wait, what?
Manaphy turns your Viper canopy to your own personal high-definition entertainment system with super-quality surround sound and a vast variety of movies, sports, music, and the largest assortment of pornographic movies downloaded from all 12 colonies just before the Cylons blew us the fuck up.
Yeah.
With Manaphy, you can turn your own Viper into your own personal masturbation station.
Oh.
It gives a whole new meaning to the word cockpit.
Oh, yeah.
And with the Manaphy's 3D feature, POV videos have a whole new level of enjoyment.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the newly added tip cap feature, which attaches to the tip of your member and will catch all those necessary achieve releases and vent them out into space.
Bombs
away! To most likely land on your wingman's canopy.
Ugh.
And hence a new game shall be born.
Fucking gross, man!
So check out our new enhanced canopy installations and start enjoying Manaphy today.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cinema-Rehash. Be sure to give us some awesome iTunes reviews, like us on Facebook, don't forget to check out past episodes, and join us next time on Cinema-Rehash.